Hello and welcome to News 24 on air, our live audio service. I'm Ihlali Ntsabo. News 24 understands that two of the three suspects accused of breaking into President Cyril Ramaphosa's Phalaphala game farm in 2020 were interviewed by the president's head of security, but the president's protection team failed to ensure that they were charged. The three suspects, Froliana Joseph and her brother Ndilishano, and Namibian-born Emanuela David, were arrested and charged earlier this month over the Phalaphala break-in and said to have made away with over $580,000, which Ramaphosa claims was a security deposit for 20 substandard buffalo. The Office of the Public Protector found the Presidential Protection Unit's decision to not report its probe to the police as improper conduct. But Presidential Protection Services head Wally Roda said he was not investigating the break-in when he interviewed one of the farm's general workers, but was rather inquiring about it. To discuss the story further, we are joined on the line by Karen Morn, legal specialist writer at News 24, and also Jan Gerber, who's a senior politics reporter at News 24. Thank you both for joining us today. Karen, let's start off with you. I think the biggest question that a lot of us are asking ourselves is, if Major General Wally Roda was inquiring, as he says, about the break-in, did that then mean he still could not disclose his findings to the police to help with investigations?
At the time, there was no case docket opened, and that was really material to the public protector's finding that that investigation was improper, because his argument was, I am empowered and able to investigate so-called security breaches because I'm responsible for the president's security. But the acting public protector, as she then was, she's now the permanent public protector, completely rejected that explanation because it was sort of counterbalanced by this evidence, which Ruda confirmed in many respects that he'd actually gone and spoken to the accused, not in terms of a security breach, but rather in terms of how the money had come to be stolen. And so his version of events was rejected, and this issue of the charges not being laid was firmly at the heart of that. And of course, Jan, when he wrote about this, when we wrote the combined story, drew attention to the fact that in the interview with the public protector investigator, Ruud at some stage makes a comment to the effect that, you know, it's about protecting sparing the protectee, in this case the president, from potential embarrassment. And it seems that that kind of ethos overrode the requirement, the legal requirement for crimes of this nature to be reported.
Right. Jan, let's now bring you into the conversation, because I'm also very curious to find out as well. Does the Presidential Protection Unit actually have powers to conduct as a preliminary probe, as they call it? Because it's also quite interesting that in your guys' story, both former National Police Commissioner Kehla Sithole and former Crime Intelligence boss Peter Jacobs seem to be arguing otherwise.
Well, the Protection Services' job is to look after the protection of the president, obviously. So it is part of the job to investigate possible security breaches and possible threats. However, that does not explain why they did not alert the National Commissioner about the alleged crime that took place at Phalaphala.
Right.
And I think that's the big issue here, is that they did not open a case, or that they did not give it over to detectives to investigate.
Right, right. And perhaps maybe a question to both of you now. If Roda was inquiring about how much was stolen, and I think now we've established that, you know, initially they were looking at a security breach, which is basically what President's attorney Peter Harris at some point had argued and said in an interview with the Office of the Public Protector. But, I mean, it's quite clear as the story unfolds that they had came to the realization that perhaps a break-in, a burglary had taken place. I'm just now curious to find out, now that they've established that they were investigating a crime and not a security breach, wouldn't they still have been required to report their findings to crime intelligence and police?
Well, I mean, that's the pivotal issue. And then what makes it worse, of course, is that there is evidence that they then go to Cape Town. One of the officials, Sergeant Rakota, goes to Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
He says because he has this information that the accused who were living in the Mzamayetu informal settlement in Harbe liked to go to a certain tavern to quote-unquote hang out.
Right.
He said he gets sent there to investigate whether that's true or not. It's a very bizarre explanation. And then we also have evidence in the Rule 53 record for the public protector's investigation that a certain police officer who is not named in the affidavit then arrived at Barron's, which is a car dealership in Cape Town, in 2020, where no docket has been opened, and asks about the purchase of cars which were allegedly funded with the proceeds of the Palapala burglary. And nothing of that is saying to me security breach. It's all about a burglary investigation. And that's where the lines have very firmly been muddied, and that the security breach argument, which was rejected by the public protector, really doesn't seem to stand.
Right. Karen, I'm also curious to find out, did the presidential protection team not find it very sinister or quite unusual for the security chief to be dining with the suspects during their said inquiry that they were conducting?
Well, I mean, that's again one of the strange aspects. I mean, we have an unfortunate history in South Africa of these sort of, you know, we know of at least another sort of off the books investigation with former president or then president Jacob Zuma,
mm-hmm.
having the SSA on evidence led before the state capture inquiry, interrogating Maantuli and Nompumelela Maantuli Zuma on the allegations that she had colluded with a CIA agent to poison him. And, you know, being hooked up to what polygraphs, woken up in the middle of the night, having her phone seized, all that kind of thing. But one would have truly hoped that that kind of outside the judicial legal environment investigation would have stopped then and there. And the suggestion here is that it didn't. That there was, it's only going to add fuel to the fire of the allegation made by Fraser, who of course was at the SSA at the time of, you know, its investigation into Maantuli,
mm-hmm.
Who was cleared of any wrongdoing because there was no forensic evidence that Zuma had in fact been poisoned. But he then says there was a cover up here.
Right.
And he has made a number of overblown allegations. Certainly we could see in the interview transcripts as Jan wrote about that Rutte got very upset by the allegation that suspects in the Palapala burglary had been tortured and kidnapped and all this kind of stuff. You know, there isn't necessarily a suggestion of that. But everything about this, the failure to report, the failure to make the National Commissioner aware of what had happened, Ketna Sithole said that Rutte completely failed, was guilty of serious misconduct in relation to that. And the fact that crime intelligence said it wasn't aware. And then, of course, we have these documents revealing to us that after Rutte was Emanuela David, which is the mastermind of this burglary, is named, we see Rutte and Benjani Chauke, who was then Ramaphosa's advisor, going to Namibia literally within days of crime intelligence receiving information that this Emanuela David has been arrested. And you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck.
Right. Just to add to that, I think the story keeps on having very weird and unexpected turns to it. But like, as you guys have mentioned, it's quite concerning that the PPS did not report its inquiring findings to the police. And that really does set a very questionable precedent to the public. And also taking into account Wally Roeder's response, where he basically insinuated that, you know, it seems like it's the PPS priority to protect the image of the president. What else do you guys hope the readers take away from the story? Jan, maybe let's start off with you.
Well, I think, first of all, for me as a parliamentary reporter, one of the big things is that it's like more than a year after these allegations emerge, and we still have all these unanswered questions, and Parliament on three occasions chose not to investigate it. So that's the first problem. The other thing is like there's like multiple authorities investigating, but they're only, each of them are investigating only a part. of the affair. So you can't get the complete picture. I suppose the Hawke investigation should provide a more complete picture. Mm-hmm. So that's two of the big issues for me.
Right, right. Karen?
You know, one of the tragedies is that over the last few years, and I think it began with the firing of Lucy Piccoli, after the Jinwala inquiry, is that we've seen a concerted hollowing out of law enforcement, and we've seen a concerted politicization of law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And and we heard evidence about that. It wasn't really dealt with by Zorndorf for various reasons, but we have affidavits, we have evidence about these politically driven prosecutions, about, we've seen evidence that the NPA seems to be struggling in certain instances to prosecute, high-profile corruption matters. It's first state capture trial ending in a discharge, which it's now seeking to appeal. And I think that, for me, is the tragedy, is that, outside a kind of parliamentary impeachment investigation, I don't know that we will see law enforcement getting to the truth. Mm-hmm. I would hope that there is a concerted investigation, but we know over and over again when these matters emerge in court that they aren't properly prosecuted. What does give me a degree of interest and possibly hope is that we do have three suspects who were interviewed by Reuter right in the beginning of this thing, the mm-hmm. alleged mastermind Emanuela David now having been charged. And they potentially, in defending themselves, may provide us with far more insight into what happened, what police or PPS officials said to them, didn't say to them, and their kind of response to the fact that they were able to just spend all of this money in the way that they did without ever facing any charges. It's only as a consequence of Fraser, of the most profound ironies of all ironies, laying these charges, that we finally have this process in court. And that's particularly problematic because the president is the first citizen of the country. Mm. And while he has certain, the public protector has found that he did report, he reported appropriately to Reuter, my hope that as the would be that as the president, he would have made damn sure that there would have been a case open and transparency, and this entire event would have been reported, and that his constitutional obligations to ensure proper functioning of the law enforcement system wouldn't have been overrided by his desire on Reuter's version to protect his dignity. Because that's just going to give further fuel to the fire that there's this perception that this $580,000 weren't, as has been found, a down payment on Buffalo, but maybe something a little bit more sinister.
Karen. I just want to latch on to the point Karen made about the hollowing out of the justice system. Mm-hmm. If you look at the budget, the Hawks investigates crimes like these, receives a smaller budget than the protection services, the police protection services, which includes the VIP protection services. So that tells you something about government's priorities. Mm-hmm. And their priorities, their own protection above investigating serious criminal, serious corruption. So I think you should keep that in the back of your mind when you consider these things.
Karen and Jan, thank you for joining us. And to read the full story, do visit news24.com. That's all we have for now. Until next time, I'm Ihlali Ntsabo.